This podcast is part of the Podcast Your Scene Network. Visit us at www.podcastyourscene.com.
Yeah, the local media has an agenda that they're going to serve. I don't know who's in charge of it or what it is, if it's like a headless monster.
Why? This is a question.
Walking backwards. Yeah. Something sacred.
I don't know the names of the creep songs. Those
running in circles.
Just pop in and let play.
Sea of Glass.
The Flight and the Fall.
I love Ozzy. I think he's the true definition of a rock star. So care about
by your speakers. Anybody else have any interesting stories they want to tell?
This is Doug from After the Fall. Hey, this is John Lane from the Thriving Tropics of Leechburg, Pennsylvania.
The Pennsylvania Rock Show. Featuring the best unsigned rock that Pennsylvania has to offer.
Still cigarettes fill the room. And as I strum the strings, I begin to sing as a teardrop falls from my eye.
Hey, it's Bill, and you're tuned in to the Pennsylvania Rock Show, featuring the best unsigned rock that Pennsylvania has to offer, right here on PARockShow.com, MegaRockRadio.net, and 107.1 FM St. Louis, Missouri. With me tonight on the show are Jimmy, Lee, Jeff, and Nick from the band Big Atlantic. What's up, gentlemen?
What's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Rock and roll!
So like normal, I had my conversation with these guys before we started recording, and I'm going to ask them a question with an idea of what the answer is ahead of time. But so my question is to you, where's the oddest place? And maybe it's not what you were telling me, but where's the oddest place you've ever played?
Well,
maybe I should have said coldest.
Yeah, that's probably going to
be. Let's go with coldest.
We even have a video up actually on Facebook of a little promo thing we did of telling people to come out to the parade and stuff. But I mean, it was like 60 some degrees 2 days before the St. Patrick's Day parade. What was it? It was March 11th.
That's right.
And, you know, we were outside in shorts and stuff. And then, you know, for 2 weeks, it was really nice, and the St. Patty's Day parade comes around, and it's like 15 single digits. Degrees.
We all got in our cars that morning, and everybody was saying single digits. It's like, oh, we had so many hand warmers, and
I've never worn so many layers in my life.
Yeah,
we were waking up at like 5 in the morning to go down and get set up on the bus and get down there for the parade.
Yeah, we ended up playing on top of a double-decker bus.
Yep.
Yeah, thanks
Pittsburgh
to Vinny.
Companies.
Yeah, Pittsburgh Tour Company. Thanks, Vinny. But yes, but what happened was is in order for us to have power on top of this thing, and keep in mind we were kind of figuring that, hoping for the best, but and as far as weather goes, but we kind of figured it would be, you know, nice out, and we were totally wrong. So to get power on top of the bus anyway, we had, you know, we put a generator up there and we had our signs hanging off the bus, and there's so much prep work, and it was so weird up there because we had to take out rows of seats because this is a tour bus. Like they do Pittsburgh City tours, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had Josh Earhart, our friend, you know, another musician in Pittsburgh, you know, come out and do sound and everything. And we had the speakers just tied down to the
ratchet strap,
to the bars. To the top of the bars and everything. Yeah. And
we made it happen.
Yeah, we made it happen. But when we were starting, and we tried to warm up and everything, we had hand warmers and we had like 4 layers on and couldn't move. You know, we looked like a kid from the Christmas store.
I knew you were going to say that.
But
Nick was in the back with the generator, and so he was getting fumed out the whole time.
Yeah.
And our friend Josh, who was around sound, was also doing live Facebook video, and it was so funny because he would be filming Lee and Jeff and I at the front of the bus, and you could hear all the vocals and you can hear all the instruments and you could hear everything. And then he'd turn around and look at Nick, and all you could hear was drums and generator. It was like he was in his own little world back there.
You should put that.
I could not hear anything. I could not hear these guys playing.
But he had it back.
So I was just playing, hoping that they were.
They were on. On point with you.
He had a mic nicely, so it sounded great outside, but it was something else on top of that bus, man.
Yeah. Oh, so well, luckily, we had, you know, we've been in some pretty bad sound situations where, and we played enough together where we know what's happening, you know, we're pretty well rehearsed, and it just, it worked out. But even then, if you're well rehearsed, that, you know, stuff can go wrong. So
if you can't hear, you can't hear.
Yeah, exactly. And it's harder to get into it too. But it was so cold out. We tried to warm up our vocals, and I remember we started playing right when we started moving,
And the people were probably, you know, I don't know, 200 yards up, you know, before you even saw the people. And we were just kind of warming up. And I remember losing my voice before we even got to the crowd because it was just too cold, you know, and terrible for the voice. But, you know, we had three microphones. We have three singers, Jeff and I and Jimmy. You know, we do harmonies and stuff. And Jimmy plays keys and guitar, and Jeff plays bass. I play guitar and, you know, sing. And
I hit stuff.
Yeah, and he hits stuff with wood. So, but yeah, it was a weird setup because we were facing like one side of the bus, and we were way up front, and Nick was way in the back, and you know, and we were like completely parallel with each other, and it was just awkward. But you know, we got underneath the underpass, and wouldn't you know, okay, that as soon as we pull underneath this underpass, and the people are like right beyond this underpass in a strip district, right?
PA starts screaming.
PA just starts screaming, yeah, and feedback. And then we stopped in there, and then we look back, and all we see is Nick just getting smoked out.
the generator.
This dude had like, nowhere to go but me.
I was like, dude, he's dead, man. I mean, he's going to die.
We're on top of that double-decker bus, and, like, we had to duck because the overpass was right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You reach out. You didn't even have to stick your arm all the way up. It was just, like, right over your head.
And that was the other thing that you had to be careful of is you know, we like to perform when we get on a stage. And we were standing on seats and everything, and we had people like pointing and everything, like, look out, man, look out, you know, and there's like lights just about ready to take us out and everything. We were like
looking under traffic lights and signs and stuff.
Yeah, so we had to be kind of, it was an awkward show because of the weather, number one. Number two, the way that our whole stage was set up. Number three, the generator was extremely loud. So that was kind of a little bit weird.
We really just couldn't communicate at all.
Yeah, we couldn't communicate. We played great, but like it was just really awkward.
For me, number four was I was more sick than I had been in the past like 4 years, maybe. I was just hacking stuff up and like trying to sing and everything.
Yeah.
I had hand warmers like gaff taped to my hands so I could feel them while I'm playing.
I realized quite quickly I needed like a football player stance because every time he'd stop and start, it was like, and I'm standing at the keyboard. So, you know, I'm just sort of standing.
There's a couple times he hit the brakes and all three of us just moved like 2 feet and the microphone stayed in place. And we were like in the middle of like singing and we're like, oh man. But I mean, there was all kinds of circumstances that just really just made that show We were glad when we got to the end of that parade. We were like, let's get out of here.
Oddly, you know? That was like one of the most fun shows, I think, for me. At the end of it, like the fact that we like made it through and accomplished that was.
Yeah, it's dangerous, man. Like, depending on what kind of shows you're, I mean, it can be hazardous. Yeah. But the thing is it's all the weird shows like that for.
Well, what are some other odd ones that you've done?
What else have you done?
I mean, there's. Let me think here. What else have we done that's really weird?
At a band, tell me one time that they played a dog park.
You know,
aside from like home built stages.
Yeah, I mean,
we've done
living room shows and stuff, you know, which I know you've got.
I've done that.
The one time, you know, Jimmy and I actually. Shortly before Big Atlantic, we were in a band called Pathemos, and Nick Quinn, the bass player from Love Betty, was actually in that band with us, and we ended up playing at Cassidy Ice or something like that in, I don't know, Irwin or North Huntington, wherever that is. And
yeah, I know where it is, but I don't know what city that is.
Okay, yeah, so if you know where it is, that's all counts, you know. So we're on our way home, and it's like 2 o'clock in the morning. We just got done with a 3-hour set, and we actually got a phone call from a bunch of school teachers that were teachers of mine back in high school, and there was this party going on in Latrobe on Route 30, like in this house in the middle of nowhere, basically. There's no other houses around. So we decided to swing by, and we already had our gear. And they're like, well, why don't you just come in and set up in the living room? So we set up in the living room about 2:30 in the morning and played till about 5. And it was pretty awesome, actually, but it was just very, it was very weird too, because the way the living room was set up, the whole entire kitchen was open. So we were kind of crammed, and there was people literally walking through us, you know, and, but that house was packed, and it was a fun show, but it was very awkward because we were just kind of in the middle of everybody, you know, it was,
yeah,
you know, kind of weird. And you had to watch, you didn't whack somebody with your like head of your guitar.
That something. Was the other, that was the other time I thought of when you, when, he asked, yeah, when Bill, when you asked,
yeah, a lot of shows.
I mean, for me personally, you know, a weird experience, I would say, and a nerve wracking one for me. I have this thing, and I think every musician does, you know, especially if you're an improv player, where, you know, you see bands playing, you're like, hey, I wonder if I can get up there and just like jam with that band, or, you know, if you know somebody. And I happened to be in Hawaii. My mom was getting married, and Sha-na-na was playing. They're a 50s rock and roll group. And
I was wondering how that made it on the list.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Sha-na-na was a kind of like a Michael J. Fox, like Back to the Future kind of thing that happened to me. Cause it kind of changed the course of my music career, actually. But there's this, and that's a whole nother story, but there's this really hot chick that was, Lori Bennington. I'll never forget her name. She's from Minneapolis, you know, and she was like working this like security, like watching the backstage area. You had to go in a total separate room than the ballroom to even, you know, get into the backstage area. And I was like, hey, I'm with the band, you know, you should, you know, let me back there or whatever. And she's like, no, no. She's like, you're not with the band, blah, blah. And I was probably 18 years old or something like that. And so a bunch of people just started walking by her, and she got distracted for a second. So I ran back there, and she kind of didn't see me at all. And I turned a corner, and I ended up in the kitchen with a bunch of chefs. But, so these guys are looking at me, and I'm like, hey, what's up? She's looking for the bathroom, you know? And, so I come out of the doors, and she saw me at the end of the hall, and she's like, hey, you know, and I actually, you know, kind of walked fast, but I was kind of paying attention to look, or, you know, look back to see how she was running after me or whatever. I turned a corner, and I ran right into Eugene Edwards. The guy who was playing guitar for him, and spilled his coffee all over his shirt. And I was like, oh man, I'm sorry. I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, oh, it's cool. It's cool. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, I'm just looking for the band. I'm friends with them or whatever. And he's like, I'm in the band. And I'm like, oh, you are? I'm like, oh, I'm a guitar player from Pittsburgh, blah, blah, blah. And he starts spitting out all this stuff, right? And Eugene Edwards is just like, he's like, oh, he's cool. He's cool. You know, let him go. And I was like, yes, he told you or whatever. And I ended up hanging out with Eugene, and like, he took me in the dressing room, and I was hanging out with Sha-na-na, and I was joking with him about getting on stage with him. And Jocko was, you know, he's like, yeah, sure kid. He's a Jersey guy, you know. He's like, yeah, whatever, blah, blah. And they got on stage, so I stayed backstage on stage right, and I was kind of like just pestering him. And if you ever met my mother, you would know that she has like the most annoying voice when she wants something in the world.
is she going to be listening to this? Should I cut that out?
Probably. But no, I mean, like, all in love, I mean this, okay? But and thank God for her annoying voice, because she finally did the whole like, excuse me, you know, from the crowd. And she's like, my son wants to play, you know. And this guy's like, and this guy on stage is like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to kill this kid. You know, I hate this kid right now and his family. So like, so he eventually comes over when the songs were playing, and, you know, they were in the middle of like doing leads or something. And he's like, pulls me aside and, you know, cursed a couple times, whatever, at me. And he's like, now, can you actually play, or you just, you know. You know, I'm like, yeah, I can actually play. I was like, just give me a key, you know, or whatever, you know. And he's like, oh, it's, you know, key of G145, which is going to go like this, you know. And I was like, I got it. And, you know, he ended up bringing me on stage, and I ended up finishing a night with him. And ever since then, he kept in touch with me and Paulie, the drummer, and everybody. And Jocko ended up kind of mentoring me and became like a large reason why I started going to Berkeley, and, you know, and he really put in a lot of recommendations for me in different places. And I met a lot of other people too, Casey and the Sunshine Band and the Doobie Brothers and stuff. And it was just a real great journey. I became friends with Furman Goitisolo and Wayne and those guys. And it was a cool experience. And that kind of was a weird show for me though, because when he actually put me on, I didn't think that I was going to finish the night with them. And I kind of walked off the stage, and being underage, you know, went to the bar and got a couple beers. And I'm way in the back of, like, you know, probably over 1,000 people maybe in that place. And because it's a big hotel, it's the same one that Dog the Bounty Hunter got married in on his show or whatever. And funny enough. And he calls my name, and I'm holding two beers in my hand. And everyone's like looking around. I'm like, oh no, this is not good. So I'm like, excuse me. And I'm like making my way to the stage with these two beers in my hand. And I'm just like, oh no, man, this guy's definitely going to hate my guts. You know, I got back up there and played with them, and it was a good time. But that was a weird, awkward moment for a second, you know. But I don't know. Like any musician, I think, like, once you get up there, you start playing. I really don't get nervous for shows. For that one, I was kind of until I got up there, you know, and I didn't even know who Shut Out Now was at that time. So, but it worked out good. So,
well,
Jimmy passed out on stage one time, if you want to talk about embarrassing.
Oh, yeah.
I was looking around.
You guys are prepared. You were paying attention to my past shows.
Oh, we always do. Come on, man. We love listening to this kind of stuff. Rock and roll, you know.
I don't even have to ask you the questions. That's awesome. Absolutely. Let's talk about embarrassing moments.
Yeah,
that was quite strange. Lee and I were in sort of like a little blues project, just to go out, play a couple places, make a little money, and we went to this one place, and I had a shot when I got there, and maybe another one like later on after we had set up and stuff. And then someone brought a shot out right before we went on. And then halfway through the first set, I'm like, whoa, what's going on? I'm like dizzy, like wavering around. I don't know what happened.
Got roofie.
I think I got,
it sounds that way.
it honestly like that's, I'm so confused by that. But yeah, at one point, I was opening my eyes like, whoa, what's going on? And I'm on the floor. And Lee's like, Jimmy, get up. And I got up and just kept playing like nothing happened. And the rest of the night was kind of blurry. I mean, we got through it, but.
You know, usually when someone ends up on the floor, they kick him out of the bar.
Man, this place was rough. I mean, this is probably like 12 years ago.
There were two fights there. Like, we played there a couple times.
Someone pulled a knife out. Yeah.
Yeah, twice.
There's a rough place like down in the south side.
No names.
Millsite Tavern. Yeah. It's not there anymore, obviously, for reasons. But that was kind of a rough place. It's just every time we went there something bad happened, you know. but I don't know. What about you, Nick? Did you ever like get caught with your pants down or anything?
No one would know anyway behind the drums.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick plays every show with his pants down.
Yeah. Nobody has any idea. There's always free roaming out there.
Yeah.
I remember one time in my old band with Nick, we were in a 311 tribute back in the day. And sort
of in 2011.
Yeah. We played 311 Day 2011 on March 11th.
Talk about March 11th.
Dude. I know. All our weird stuff happens on March 11th. It's a holiday for us.
Yeah. But no, it's not.
But man, what did we play? Like 60 songs that night?
60.
And that was the year that my Chili Peppers tribute opened for our 311 tribute.
Yeah, you were pulling double duty that night.
So I played 70 songs that night. That was a long show. Man, my fingers are bleeding by the end of that night. That was a brutal one. But we finished the second set, and like I'm going downstairs to like change my shirt and like just run to the bathroom real quick. And we talked to the sound guy at the beginning of the show, and we let him know that our opener in the third set starts with a sample. So he was going to trigger the sample from the booth back there. And I guess we were getting ready to go back on, but I was kind of still taking a piss. And
he triggered it.
Sure enough, he hit the button. And so the other four guys go up and they're playing. And so I'm like down there washing my hands and I'm hearing music and I'm like, that sounds pretty familiar. I think I know that song. So I run upstairs. My bass is like leaning against the wall because I'd asked Dan to hold it. He just left it against the wall. So I just picked it up and I just like creepily like crouch walk across the stage. Cause sure, I'm on the far side of the stage from where you get on. So I'm walking behind everybody else in the middle of the song and I just come in the middle of this verse. That was definitely like my weirdest stage moment. That was weird. Just having the whole band play.
It was definitely like we start playing the song and it's like, wait, where's Jeff?
Yeah. You
know? and we have no control over the fact that the song had started because the sound guy triggered it. So it's like, well, we're starting.
You had to do that, and didn't you?
I did.
That's why you only have four. When we have four guys in a band, it's called
No Control. That was my little plug.
You have four guys in a band, you know where everybody's at, you know?
Yeah.
Except for Jimmy.
You have five, yeah, that's true.
And we never know where Jimmy is.
Where's Jimmy?
That's our catchphrase.
Where am I? Hashtag, where's Jimmy?
Where am I?
We joked we're going to start a punk band called Where's Jimmy? We're going to switch instruments.
Yeah. Yeah, so we can, you know, get that trash sound out of everything. You got to let me play drums if you can do that.
Yeah.
Because I'll lose at every measure, man. Fluctuate the tempo, 10 BPMs.
It won't be any better if you give me a guitar.
But anyway, show stuff. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot that we'll think of probably right after you hang up.
Well, you can always comment on the website.
Yeah, you can add them. We'll do that. There's many stories.
Let me ask you a cliche question, and then we'll take a short break and come back. So tell me about your band name. Where did it come from?
Oh.
That's a question everyone hates to be asked, but
no, it's got to be known. We don't hate to be asked that because, you know, we obviously have a place where it came from. But Big Atlantic. So my mom actually had a dream a long time ago, probably like, I don't know, a year or two before I started the band. That, you know, she walked into a concert or something with some friends and they were all ready to have a good time. And I guess the people around her were like, oh, you know, and she's like, who's playing? And they're like, oh, it's Big Atlantic, it's Big Atlantic. And they couldn't believe she hadn't heard of them or whatever. And they're like, yeah, they made it. They're, doing really well, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, who's Big Atlantic? And then, you know, I come out on stage with a band and, you know, I think back in 2008, you know, I left my old band Time and Distance and, which is like a pop touring act. And I just, we were searching for a name, you know, and I just didn't know what to name it. And I was like, you know, that kind of has a story behind it because a lot of, songs in Big Atlantic, it ties in with like the influence of the lyrics sort of. A lot of songs are that I write lyrically and not every song or anything, but quite a few are influenced by dreams. And it's so weird how that happens to me and I don't know why, but yeah, so we ended up naming it Big Atlantic because, you know, it was after a dream she had, but I had a similar dream about it. And that's what kind of closed the deal for me. I was debating about this whole band name thing. I think I was thinking about it too much. And I had a dream myself that, I showed up to a show and, you know, I walk out on stage and, you know, there's a Big Atlantic backdrop, you know, behind a drummer. And I was just like, oh, you know, cool. And I woke up and I was like, yeah, it's going to be Big Atlantic because I'm tired of thinking about it. So that's just I took it as a sign per se and a justification on naming it that. So, and that's kind of how it came about. You know, and I think too, like brand wise, we're a motivational band and, you know, still City Rock and Roll band. So I think, you know, we, we have a lot of dreams through music that we want to accomplish in our life. So, you know, the whole dream web, the web of dreams kind of matches, you know, our songwriting and how the band come about or how the band name came about. So, you know, it just made sense. So
I have two songs queued. And I'm going to let you guys tell me about one of them and the other one. I don't know if you know. I have Battling Chains by Big Atlantic. And then I have 13 Saints and their song Smile, which I got yesterday.
Cool.
So, but why don't you tell me a little bit about Battling Chains?
I'm familiar with that one a little bit. I think I know that song.
Are you sure? I hope so. Because yeah. We got a show in a couple weeks. So. Actually, a week and a half. Why don't you go ahead and start, Jeff? Because, you know, you explained it in the promo video. No? He's shaking his head. No.
I don't know. man, where to start?
I mean, I think there's a lot to this song that, you know, we try when we create art, because our songs are our art. We really focus on bringing and putting ourselves into it, and that's why it usually takes a long time for us to write records, because we don't want to put anything on a record or put it out unless we're like really feeling it, because that's what really helps us perform them better live. And for me, you know, Battling Chains, I started writing it because I was having a terrible day. And it's one of those days where everything was going wrong. I actually spilled my coffee on my studio desk, and you know, I went out to get some carpet cleaner and you know, and some other things out of the kitchen. I come in and I go to clean it, and like I bend down, I smack my head off the desk, and then like, you know, right when I smack my head off the desk, I get real mad and my guitar falls over. It's just like one thing after another, like all day long, it's going like this, right? And you're just figuring out all this bad news. And at the end of the day, it was close to finishing, you know, the lyrics and stuff. And Jimmy and I usually go over a lot of the lyrics together because we write really well together. And
we always have a clear goal, like a clear idea on the song. And
I got the worst phone call, you know, and it was from a friend, and he told me, you know, another friend of mine hung himself, and it kind of polished off the song really in an unfortunate circumstances, because it was like, you know, I'm having this bad day and complaining and all this stuff. And you know, this guy obviously felt like he was having a much worse day and ended up taking his life over it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So Battling Chains, kind of even the title, when you're having one of those days, it kind of feels like you're just, you know, chains are something you can't really break. You know, if you're chained to something, you're kind of screwed. And it's just about survival and surviving through that day and making it, you know, to another one to restart the new day. And you're just kind of you're struggling, but you know, you're just taking it like a man and taking it as best you can, and just looking on the bright side of things, you know. So
yeah, it just mirrored a lot of what I think each of us was kind of going through personally, and also the band as a whole. But we kind of found our way to the other side through kind of a period of time when that song got written and a couple other songs got written. And we're starting to
see the light, kind of.
Exactly.
Yeah, because at the time, too, we were – at this point in time, we were struggling as a band because we were kind of getting bored, and we couldn't figure out – I mean, we knew what we wanted to sound like, but we just didn't – we didn't feel like that when we were playing some of the songs we write. So we probably wrote, like, you know, 50 ideas and, you know, 25 songs out of this that probably most of us have forgotten about. They're shorter in the studio, but you know, and we were struggling to try to really bring ourselves into our songs, you know, at that time. And we focused on that really hard, and we're kind of, we don't really fight per se, but we bicker, you know, sometimes. And I mean, we actually get a lot of compliments, which we always laugh because people are like, you guys get along so good, I don't believe it, blah, blah. And we're like, huh. You know, it's a relationship. It's a lot of work. You know, like, we put a lot of work into, you know, our relationship in the band in order to make the art better. You know,
and it's really like, we don't hold on to things. I think that's really what's important about getting along. It's like, we can yell at each other, but it's, nobody really takes it personally. You know, it's all, what we're all trying to do, what's in the best interest of the band.
It's never personal. It's always about our common interests and goals and where we all want to be,
which we figured out. I mean, we sat down, I mean, me going to school for artist management at Berkeley, obviously, and managing bands and stuff. And, at first I kind of, George Howard, this guy that writes for Forbes, he's an excellent mentor and instructor at Berkeley. And he kind of blew my mind. He used to own Ryko Disc, actually, with in TuneCore. He founded TuneCore with Jeff Price. And he just really inspired me. And he's like telling me about this hedgehog concept. And we had it in class and everything. And this hedgehog concept is basically this concept of what you're passionate about, what you're best at in life, and what your economic driver is, like what drives you to make money. And he told me, he's like, look, if you figure this out, you know, he's like, you know, if you get everybody on, you'll get everybody on the same page. And when you get everybody on the same page, a lot of problems and a lot of things that hold you back from creating the best art you possibly can go away, you know, and you're left with, you know, the diamonds, you know, the fruits of your labor and per se. And we kind of were looking at each other when we were doing these things, and we're like, dude, like, we probably spent 6 to 8 months on figuring out like why we were doing this and what we wanted to do with you. It was kind of like therapy, honestly. And we kind of, and one day we just clicked and we figured it all out. And we just, you know, we were after the same things, you know, writing wise and goal wise. So when we write songs and when we make decisions, we don't really argue about them. I mean, we just make them for the best of the band, you know, it's part of the brand. So
yeah, at that point, that's probably right around the time that we were jamming, and Battle and Chains kind of came from a riff Lee started playing, and we all just joined in, and the song kind of was born. It's like we played the song, and it's pretty much identical on the record to how we played it at that moment. And it was start to finish. The song was just created suddenly.
Yeah. And, you know, we're always in a studio too. It's another interesting thing. And, because we have one, and we record all of these things and the first times we come up with songs, and we have all those, and we faded in, you know, the actual album of She's the One, and we faded it back out at the end and stuff. So you can like hear like when it was first born and what it turned into. And I mean, we have it for a personal like use, but you know, we thought about just putting that stuff out just to like let people listen to it and hear kind of what we did and how we did it. But a lot of times now, I mean, we obviously built our chemistry up and played a lot of crappy shows and, you know, trying to get used to, you know, performing songs, you know. And I think any band, when you're, you know, trying to get your stuff going, is all about going out and doing live band practice per se. And you know, now we come in the studio, we bring an idea, and it's just like, hey, you know, check this out. And then it's a song about 2 hours later if we're, you know, grooving pretty good. But
everything started gelling right around the time we wrote Battle and Chains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so let's go ahead and play that song, and we'll come back and get into some other things with you guys.
Okay, as long as you pay us after you're done.
did you read the agreement? So Battling Chains by Big Atlantic, followed by 13 Saints and their song Smile, here on the Pennsylvania Rock Show. I'll be right back. Today is wearing on my weak point, about to lose control. Every time I get a lead going, oh, something knocks me out cold. Now I'm a soldier and survivor. My teeth are grinding away. I start the spinning light.
promise you. Oh, but it
smile. day is done and the sun comes to rest. I file away the memories in my mind, compartmentalizing what goes where and why, or if it's even worth the space inside. There's finite boundaries on what stays and what shall go. And though it hurts to say goodbye, some memories need to die. Some memories need to fly away and be free. Some memories need to die. Some memories hurt too much to keep inside of me. That day on the pier, that moment on the bridge, that festival where we all had so much fun, that night where the fireworks reflected in her eyes, I think they've all had their moments in the sun. I must make room for what still waits for me, although I'll never know the reasons why, but some memories need to die. Some memories need to fly away and be free. Some memories need to die. Some memories hurt too much to keep inside of me. Some memories need to die. Some memories need to fly away and be free. Some memories need to die. Cause some memories hurt too much to keep inside of me. Inside of me. Is done and my body comes to rest. In those last moments, what will flood me are all the special times that define this life, and that's all that I'm taking on with me. If I'm to pass with a smile upon my face, I have to kill what makes me cry. So some memories need to die. Some memories need to fly away and be free. Some memories memories need to die. Cause some memories hurt too much to keep inside of me. Some memories need to die. Some memories need to fly away and be free. Some memories need to die. Some memories hurt too much to keep inside of me. Some memories need to die. Oh, yeah, some memories need to fly away and be free. Some memories need to die.
Reach towards the sky.